D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 372, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Daniel Connolly from techguide.ie and techappcreator.com. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Thanks very much, Jeff, for having me. My name is Daniel Connolly, and I run an online computer repair business called Tech Guy, based here in Sligo on the west coast of Ireland.
Oh, okay. We're talking to you all the way from Ireland. That's pretty cool. The global internet.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, why don't you first off, just tell us a little bit about yourself and basically how you got started in computer repair.
I suppose when it came to computers, I probably got my first one back when I was 7. My father would have worked in the civil service, so he got access to computers and at work, and he bought one back in 1991. It was a Wang computer. I'm not sure if the listeners would know of the brand. It was a Japanese one based, and they had a factory based here in Ireland. That's where it all started, I suppose, just using DOS programs. I suppose fast forward to when I went to university, I did electronic engineering, and I would have learned assembly code and C and Java there. And when I graduated from there, I basically took a full-time job, not necessarily in the engineering field. But when I worked there, I decided that I wanted to run my own business. And fortunately, the business I work for now, I work evenings, that I had all that free time during the day, Monday to Sunday. So I decided to set up an online computer repair business, which is totally based online and through word of mouth.
Okay. Well, that's wow. Yeah, you definitely got a lot of different degrees and things behind you, and a lot of starting off in 1991 and working with DOS and stuff like that. That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, they were just games back then, you know, playing, sure, jumping over the crocodiles and stuff. But you know, the only use back then in 1991, it's like Windows 3.1 was there, but the only use it was if you wanted to check out Netscape or look at the calculator. But generally, I think for the following few years, it was all the main use was DOS, I think, until Windows 95 came out, and then I think the power came along.
Okay,
with Windows.
That's great. So what types of things do you work on in your shop? What have you been working on lately?
I suppose Sligo's, in terms of population, comparing to the States, it probably would be quite a small area. We're only talking about inhabitants, 20,000 people within the county. And I suppose you have surrounding rural areas as well. So, there isn't a huge volume of work, but I get a lot of variety because of that.
Okay.
I do a lot of remote support. Well, I do somewhat, because it's such a rural area, I would diversify over the whole of the county using remote, for, you know, small, malware and virus, and as well aftercare service for customers. But if we're talking about, things that come into the shop, I suppose three interesting ones we could talk today. I suppose a lot of laptop jack repairs.
Okay.
From 2010 up to now, you've probably seen yourself, there's kind of a degree of change of the way the jacks are kind of designed in there.
Yes.
A lot of them are on harnesses, which are great.
Yeah.
You know,
but
I find that Toshiba's and Asus laptops are generally 9 points. I find those the most difficult sometimes to get off the board.
Yes. Now, when you're doing a laptop jack repair, what type of flux and different things are you using to get those off the board?
Well, I'll tell you, I started researching back in, when would it be, 2012. I got really interested in dark IRF machines. Have you ever heard of these?
Yes, I've seen them. Yep.
Yeah, so I got in contact with a Chinese supplier, and I got one of the heavy duty ones ordered, and the weight of this thing, it came by DHL, and all set up. Initially, I wanted it for reballing laptops, you know, HP DV9000s.
Yep. Oh yeah.
But after like playing around with this and doing some training courses, I found it extremely difficult, you know, because of pads and everything. But I found a very good use for the Dark IR machine. I would use it regularly for, you know, the netbooks. You know, these netbooks, a lot of times these jacks are quite, they might have multi-points, but because they're so thin, I find that I can just pop the board on a dark IR, and then basically the solder goes to butter. And you just lift it off.
Nice.
With a pair of tweezers.
Okay. That's a lot better than I have to sit with my hot air rework station and a soldering iron and try to get those things to come off. Mm-hmm. And I use a this stuff that, and it's made in China too. And I can't remember what the name of it is, but I think Lotfi of the laptop reballer, as he was known back in the day. He was using this specific type stuff. And I noticed that when I put those on the board and heat it up with a hot air gun, they would just, it would melt. And it was, I don't know what they use, but it was almost like magic.
Yeah, I do that as well. I also, for like, as I said, the Asus and the Toshiba ones, I really have to get in there and I use I have like a stand which has a hand which I point the hot air on the jack, so it heats up the ground plane because there's so much ground there.
Okay.
And I'd hit it with a soldering iron as well. I'd use Amtec, American made.
Amtec, that's right. That's what it is. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Now you have to watch out. There's cheap Amtec. If you go on eBay or these places, there's cheap Amtec, which it says made in the US, but there's no way that's made in the US. It's sticky. You need to go for like reliable suppliers, because if you get the real stuff, you know, even though the best before date says da da da, you know, when you're doing solder jack repairs, it'll last a good long time after that if it's the real stuff.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. What do you know the general price on that? I know mine was expensive, but I can't remember what I paid for it.
I actually bought the Amtec from, there's a company that did reballing up in Dublin on the east coast of Ireland. And he was selling it. I think he was buying in bulk from the States and he was reselling it to cover his costs, but it wasn't, it was only around $35. It was very reasonable.
Okay. Yeah. That's about what I spent on it. So yeah. I don't know. It seemed like when I was looking, and this was a while back, because I've still got the same tube, and it's been lasting me a while. It was kind of expensive, but well worth it compared to the cheap stuff you buy at Radio Shack.
Oh yeah.
So what other types of things besides the laptop jack repairs you've been working on?
Recently, I've been working with some local businesses, and it seems like there are a lot of businesses here that have a system set up. They would have paid a large amount of money, maybe to a company back 5-6 years to set up, you know, XP network.
Yes.
And, you know, it's all set up perfectly and it's working for them. There's no problems. Things are slowing down possibly slightly. Migration of Windows XP. There's a lot of talk about this at the moment. Have you been getting that pop-up message saying that support is going to finish on XP soon and asking you to move on to Windows 7 or Windows 8?
Yeah, I've seen that pop up on a couple of customers' machines, and I generally just shut it off, because the customers that actually need it, they need it because they would have to pay like $15,000 or more to do the specialty, you know, the specialty software that they're using for, you know, surveying or whatever.
Exactly. Know, so. Yeah, that's the point. One customer came to me, and he's actually a surveyor here on the West Coast, and he has very specific software which he installed on his XP machine, and he's gone to the suppliers and said, you know, I want to upgrade. The company will not give him that software anymore. He has to pay a subscription-based service for a newer one. And he actually brought me a PC, and the capacitors were all blown on the motherboard. So what I decided to do is research migrating XP onto a new piece of hardware, because he didn't want to pay like a few extra grand for the new software.
Right.
So I came across some very good software that I would use on a regular basis. Acronis Have you ever used this backup software?
That is, yeah, that's what I use to clone drive still today.
Oh yeah, Acronis Universal Restore Technology. This is amazing what they're doing. What they're doing is they're making the image, and then you can back it up. And with this, you can restore it back onto different hardware. So what I've been doing is the big multiples, Lenovo, Dell, HP, the business lines, they're still providing Windows 7 keys, but they're migrating now maybe to Windows 8 keys, pros. So what I've been doing, which would be, I suppose, a good tip, is using Acronis to back up the Windows XP Pro, it usually is Pro, image. And then I would recommend the customer to invest in the best quality business desktop that's available, which supports 32-bit, which has 32-bit drivers. Now, Dell is not providing them anymore, but sometimes you can find third-party ones. But Lenovo is my best bet at the moment. So okay. What I would do is I would restore it back onto the new hardware, maybe a Lenovo Windows 7 Pro. And legally, you have the downgrade rights on Windows 7 Pro to downgrade to Windows XP. So legally, your customer is in the right as well, if any kind of legal thing comes into play as well. Okay. So that strategy, I find, is working quite well. And with another company I worked with, Dava Network, and I've upgraded their computers with new hard drives, solid state drives, upgraded their hard drive in their servers, and I migrated one of their computers as well. And it seems to be a good method at the moment. And I throw on Kaspersky then for them, just for that extra bit of protection, seeing right. The XP support is finishing up soon.
Okay. All right. So some people are actually staying with the Windows XP because of specific software. And yeah. Then you recommend Kaspersky as far as an antivirus for those machines?
Yeah, like a lot of these, you know, I think most computers these days are behind hardware firewalls, your router. So right. In theory, you know, your computer is safe unless you're going to get Trojans installed. So I think this whole thing about XP is, you know, we all know the way Microsoft is moving from a license-based system onto a subscription-based system. So I think this is one of their strategies. Once they get everybody off the 32-bit system and it's onto 64, then they can kind of kill off these licenses that, like, I've had problems with running Windows 2003 on Windows 8, you know? Okay, so I think right. They're trying to migrate away from that. And I think other software companies like Sage as well are trying to migrate away from licenses to subscriptions. So I think it's just a trend at the moment in software.
Right.
But this is a way that I found to keeping everybody happy. And I suppose that's my main goal with Tech Guy, is just provide the best service and, you know, not try to overly sell, because right. Times are tight even over here. I can imagine in the States it's just as tight.
Yep.
With for local businesses.
It's one of those things. It's weird because there are times when people want something really dirt cheap, and then there's times that people, you know, you try to talk them out of replacing a motherboard on a laptop, and they'll spend $300 to replace a motherboard because they just like that particular laptop. So it's about half and half. It's, you know, you let them know, hey, that computer's like 4 or 5 years old. You probably be better off just going spend $300-$400 on a new one. And nope, I got to have that one.
Yes. So at least with this migration technique, people can, you know, if people want to keep their old operating system, they can, you know?
Right.
And I think it works quite well.
Now, you don't see anything, you don't see any problems coming, because I know there's two different camps out there that talk about, you know, there's going to be problems with all these XP machines. And then there's other people that say it's not going to be a problem, you know, if you're just doing the normal day-to-day stuff, unless you're clicking on things, obviously, that will infect you, which really no antivirus or anything really stops a lot of those things.
Yeah, well, I know Windows 8 from playing around with it. I'm running Windows 7 at the moment, primarily, but I'm playing Windows 8, and I can see people getting more used to the interface day by day when they come in to show me their laptops. But Windows 8 is substantially, I'm seeing less malware, less viruses. I'm just seeing a lot of like issues. I think Windows 8 is quite a secure system, okay. A bit more similar to maybe you know, Lion or Maverick, you know, the Mac software.
Right.
I think they're really trying to box it up, you know.
Okay.
I still think there's challenges for us as well that I don't think, because, you know, Windows 8 now has a built-in antivirus, even if you don't put anything on it, you know, Windows Defender is automatically running. So I think virus-wise, I think we're going to evolve in the computer repair as I think we're going to see less viruses with Windows 8. I think Windows XP, Vista will probably always stay vulnerable to the most common attacks. But I think there's going to be more sophisticated things with Windows 8. But I'd say one of the challenges with Windows 8 for me is when I receive a machine, I always do a double backup of information for the customers. I take the hard drive out, pop it into my data recovery box, I load up Acronis, and I just make an image, and then I boot up some individual file backup software. I suppose I'll talk later, Fab Auto Backup is what I use.
Okay.
And I just back up the files, just in case if I miss anything the first time, you know, I'm not going to lose that valuable data. But I find at Windows 8 that they're locking down the system more and more, that you can't actually boot. There's secure boot. And some of these manufacturers are actually disabling unsecure boot on BIOS. So literally, like, if you want to do anything, you need to remove the hard drive from the machine. And sometimes it's sealed in there, you know, so you're breaking the warranty.
Right.
So I'd see there's a few complications in relation to XP vulnerable or XP, you know, it's okay to run it. I would think, I still have to do more research into this, but I think that if there's going to be software companies out there that are going to fill the hole that Microsoft is leaving, you know, if there's money to be made, some company is going to step up and fill that, you know. So I think maybe Kaspersky, in my experience, seems to be the best quality one that I sell to my customers. And generally, I suppose they don't come back too much after I put Kaspersky on, but for a computer virus issues, but for, you know, hardware issues, they're always back. What's your opinion on the XP and future proofing?
Well, you know, it's one of those things, you know, and I was talking to a couple other techs about this, and we said, you know, if you just did your normal everyday things, answered email, surfed the internet, I really think it comes down to the user. And what I think we found mostly is that a lot of users are going to click on things, even when they're, you know, when they're smart enough to know that there's a pop-up window that pops up in front of them and it says, hey, this machine's infected, you know, click here to install this software to, you know, to help you out. And they go and click the X and they don't realize that they're not really shutting the window down. Yeah, they close the window and they launch the program in the background. And so now their machine's infected. You know, like the Windows 8 machines that I've seen, and the problem is these manufacturers are still, even though there's Windows Defender on there, which I use the Microsoft Security Essentials and I use Windows Defender on my Windows 8 machine, the software manufacturers are still putting a trial of Norton, McAfee, you know, whatever. And when they're doing that, these people are starting up their laptops or their desktops and they're launching that program and it's only a 60-day trial. So all the ones I get in, the Windows 8 machines that are infected, well, the trials have went out months ago, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
And so, you know, a lot of times what I'll do is once I clean up the machine, I tell them, hey, Windows Defender's on here. It's fine. I probably should look into maybe, you know, trying to make a little bit of money selling some sort of antivirus. And I know, you know, Kaspersky is good. Some people like the Nod32 and the ESET stuff. You know, so there's some good ones out there and I probably just need to, I guess I'm a little, slow when it comes to that stuff. I just want to, you know, hey, this works good. And I haven't had a problem with it, you know? So,
One note in regards to that, when I have got Windows 8 computers in and I'm removing these McCaffreys or Norton, I'm actually finding 50% of the time that Defender doesn't automatically turn itself back on.
No.
So that's something, have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's won't.
No, and it's supposed to. And this is I read an article about Microsoft, and Microsoft were basically trying to, I think, do more Mac style, like release Windows 8, no antivirus needed. But I think because they're partnered with these antivirus companies, they're making billions of dollars a year, that they had to basically have the feature to turn it off. but I think I've been using the customer exe removable file. It looks like a little program to remove it. But I think you're right. It possibly, you know, Windows 8, how secure it is locked down if you have the tightest features. I think Defender could be sufficient, but I think Kaspersky is a good one for upsell because, you know, it's quite an expensive product if you buy it directly, but you can get good margins on it if you buy it maybe on Amazon or eBay, some genuine licenses.
Okay.
McAfee's is an interesting one to watch out for. Have you heard about Intel bought it a year ago?
Right.
And they've not really done anything with it, but I went up to my local, it's called PC World here in Ireland. It's probably the equivalent of Radio Shack or somewhere. Okay. And they're trying to upsell me. Like, I bought a tablet and they're trying to sell me this McCaffrey's. And the guy said, look, this is like Intel. And I did some research and it turns their McCaffrey's is going to be basically it'll be rebranding to Intel soon. And they're changing the whole technology behind it. So I think that's definitely one to watch out for, that maybe Intel, whatever they touch goes to gold. I find that it's always quality. So I think it's something to watch out for.
That's a good point. I'm definitely going to look for that because McAfee itself has had such a bad name for years and years. Back in the day, I've had to screw up more computers than it's helped. So, you know, that's the stuff I look at. But yeah, I think if Intel, you know, does something good with that and turns it around, and they're going to have to change the name. But I think there's going to be a lot of good. I don't know. We got a lot of these crypto lockers and different things that are coming down the pike. And I think what you said before is there's probably a lot worse stuff than what we're used to dealing with as techs. And I think we're going to have to, you know, get on our game about, you know, preventing that stuff, because sometimes once it happens, the customer is pretty much they're done. You know, their files are gone. And especially most people do not back up their files. So they're pretty much, out unless they want to pay the ransomware on some of these.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Data is the key, I think. And that's the one thing that I would focus on 100% from day one when I get a laptop or a computer. It's always the data. If you gave someone the option, here's your brand new hardware or here's your data, they'll always side with the data, you know?
I believe, yeah, that's true. That is true. Very good.
I suppose the next thing I had on the list was I've listened to Podnuts and I've read forums, and there's kind of two camps in relation to when you open up a laptop and you clean out a cooling system. Copper shims. I've done a lot of research because I have the dark IR machine and I've worked on a lot of DV9000s. I actually bought over 20 boards just to do research on them, faulty boards, you know, trying to repair them. And I basically tested lots of different copper shims. What's your opinion on it when you open up a cooling system and you find that you have on the actual cooling system, you have your graphics chip and then you have your processor. And a lot of the time you have a heat pad on top of the graphics card. Some people, they leave the old pad there. Some replace the pad, or some put a copper shim with some extra heatsink paste. What would be your opinion on what would you do?
When it comes to those, because I've had a lot of those in the shop recently, when it comes to those types of things, what I've noticed is these systems were built to have a standard of cooling. The problem is most people will set their laptop on a bed, you know, where the bedspread is, or on a rug, you know, and it's pulling in all this stuff. So what I've found is on the CPU itself, I've found the melted thermal paste. And what I'll do is I'll clean that off and re-put Arctic Silver back on there, which I find to be a good thermal paste. And usually there's about a half inch of what I would call lint or, you know, whatever, half inch thick between the fan and the heat sink on the inside. That it doesn't matter how hard you blow it with air, you'll never get that stuff out. You actually have to pull the whole board apart and get that out. Once I've pulled that stuff out and redone the thermal paste, I usually leave the pads on the GPU and stuff like that because I've never had a problem. Usually that takes care of the problem. But I'm interested to hear about what you've learned about the shims.
Well, it's probably more applicable to the DV9000s. I would see a lot of those. I got a lot of shelled ones that hadn't been opened. And I've noticed with a lot of the older laptops, because there would be a lot of heat involved, that we all know that the more newer laptops are more energy efficient. So they're not pumping out as much heat. But in relation to those DV9000s and that generation, I found that the heatsink pads were like going into dust and the moisture was totally gone out of them. You couldn't necessarily leave them in that state. So okay. I used to try using copper shims on these HPs and other brands back in the early days. But I did come across one customer that when I did put a copper shim on this on their laptop, this was the day it all changed for me. It was a Toshiba. And I've opened up many laptops. My favorite one would be Lenovo and IBM because their heat sinks are just amazing. We're back.
Yep, we're back. Go ahead.
Excellent. That's a transatlantic disconnection. Must be a fiber cable gone.
We'll edit that silence out. So go ahead.
Sound. Okay. So, okay. To the point, I suppose it was a Toshiba laptop that I received. I opened it up. The pad was totally gone. Now, the heatsink itself was quite poorly designed that it had... It went on from the fan onto the processor, and then it went on to the graphics card. And then at the end of this, it was like ended in a triangle with one screw. And when I put the copper shim on with the Arctic 5, I found that the actual heatsink was putting on pressure, not on the center of the graphics chip, but on the side.
Oh, okay. Because the graphics chips are sometimes the center of them are raised a little bit.
Yeah, so what was happening was that if you looked at it, you could actually see the shim was maybe pushing 60-70% of the pressure down onto the left-hand side instead of the right. Now, if I was to leave that there, you can imagine that all that pressure would, number one, the whole of the chip isn't getting the proper... What would you say? The heat isn't being dissipated properly. And second is you have a huge amount of pressure on one side of the chip, which actually could cause damage. So from what I understood from this was that if you have a poorly designed graphics heatsink onto the graphics chip, the way they've actually overcome this cheap design is they've used a very flexible pad to basically would be basically the connection. And they have to use the properties of the pad to compensate for the lack of design. So after that, I decided I was going to research the best quality pad I could buy. There were two ones that I went with. I'll see if I can get the links for you. Both companies I purchased off eBay. The one I'm using now provides a very cost-effective one. They're based in the UK. And the heat transition is very good, maybe twice of what the standard one would be. And before that, I ordered an extremely expensive one, which would be used in industry and in the automotive industry and everything. But I didn't really see much difference between the two. And the price was probably fivefold more expensive. But we'll see if we get a link for that and put it down in the description.
Okay, that'd be great. So when you've pulled these apart, what you found is that the pads are actually disintegrating or falling apart?
Yes.
Because I don't think I've ever had any that have come in that are in bad shape like that. But I did not realize that there's a reason. I always wondered why they used the pad, but I never thought about it until you just said that. Poor design, and they just got to get something that's going to cover the whole area to kind of dissipate that heat.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, I've opened up a lot of Lenovo's. Well, my favorite brand would be Lenovo IBM. And when I open up maybe a T60 or a T61, you'll actually find that there's four screws that fit down onto the CPU. And then there's three or four that fit actually around the graphics chip. And in that case, if you want to put a copper shim, I would be 50-50 on that, because you're getting equal tension distributed across the whole of the chip. So in theory, it should be okay. But I find with the IBM and Lenovo's, they don't usually use the heatsink pads anyway. Usually it's copper to copper on the graphics chips.
Okay. All right. So they're using a more quality setup then.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's a good tip. That's something good to know, because I would have never thought about what to replace that with. So that's
definitely
good.
Definitely worth replacing the pad, even if it doesn't look great, because the moisture content of it, it's you know, it's, you're only talking 10 cent or something if you have the proper pads in stock, and it'll really kind of add to the service, you know, give a better, it might reduce it by a degree or two. And in the long run, that could be beneficial for the end customer.
Hey, for laptops, that's a big thing, because a lot of people, what they end up doing is if their laptop doesn't get cool enough, they, you know, they buy a laptop cooler, you know, to set it on their lap or set it on their desk or whatever, just to keep those things cool. They won't even bother getting them worked on or, you know, clean the fans out. So that's good to know, because actually a degree or two could actually help in that situation.
Oh yeah.
Big time. All right. So, well, that's awesome. And I'm looking at your website here, and pretty much you do everything. So, we'll save some for another time, but, we've talked about some of your favorite tools already. You said you use the Acronis Universal Restore technology, the Acronis Backup. Is that the latest version?
Well, usually what I have is I purchase my own license and I have installed in my data recovery box. I suppose it's always good to be consistent. You know, it's hard to know to keep up to date with all these licenses and stuff. But Right. Generally what it is, I have a license for my data recovery box, and I pop out the hard drive out of the customer's PC and pop it in there and do the backups. I don't have the exact version I use, but I find that they're all pretty much the same.
Okay.
If you go back 3 years, they all have the core features. As long as it has the Acronis Universal Restore technology, you're pretty much good to go. When I'm dealing with customers' PCs, usually what I do is I tell them about like this software I use, and say they're upgrading their XP system up to newer hardware. I would basically show them the website and say, okay, we're going to get a license key for you. Do you want this one, this one, this one for your business? They pick one, and I migrate over using the software, and then I install the licensed software on their PC to do regular backups. So it's a good kind of software for in the future after it's all migrated over. It gives them a backup solution, which works as well, which we were talking about earlier.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think actually the Acronis I'm still using is like 2010.
That's perfect.
Which, you know, I think works I'm using fine.
Yeah.
So that's why I was asking. I didn't know if you had the latest. I'd always looked at it and I go, should I buy the new one? And I'm like, well, this one still does what I need it to do. So not yet.
No, I think it's all cloud stuff. I think they're just adding extra little features like backup to your server over the cloud and things.
Okay.
But I think for what we're doing is the core is the same since maybe 2010.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. All right. And I see on your list, you also have Conboot.
Yeah. I love this software. You know, it's such a, I don't know who these guys are, but they're brilliant. You know, I bought it and it's paid for itself multiple times because I like to keep it simple when I'm working with clients. And sometimes they don't give me the password. Sometimes they say there's no password, and sometimes they give me the wrong password. So right. I just love this. Like what I usually would do is I do my backup, which would be Acronis, the hard drive. And then what I do is I'd use the fab auto backup to pull out the individual files. And then once I know that I have all the data, I start working on it and boot up Conboot if I can't get into their system, create a new user profile while in the open system, and then restart and boot into the new user profile. And then when I'm in there, I would remove the password off the original profile. That's if I need to do some intense kind of tuning on the system. That would be kind of my process.
Okay. Now, so for what is Conboot? What does it exactly do?
Okay, so Conboot is a little bit of software. It's probably one of the smallest bits of software I've ever come across. You burn it onto a CD, and what it happens is you put it into the computer and you boot from the CD. It actually runs into this software, and this software, Conboot, actually modifies the boot sequence so that when you get to your login screen for XP, Windows 7, and Windows 8 now, when you click on it, the computer thinks there's no password and you can get directly into the system.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds, you know what, I probably have a copy of that burned onto a disk, and I don't think I've ever used it. So that's good to know. And now, yeah, you said you paid for it. There's a paid version, or?
There's a free version that works with XP. I think they released that, and then you had to pay a premium one for Windows 7. So I would have bought it maybe a year ago or 2 years, and I'm still using it. Windows 8, I haven't needed it yet. So I haven't upgraded yet, but it was only around $50, you know, and it was, it was a good buy.
Yeah, that's $50 for a piece of software that you use all the time. That's well worth the money.
Yeah. And I suppose the last bit of software I'm really liking at the moment is Fab Auto Backup.
Yes.
He's been on your show before, hasn't he?
That's, yes.
I heard about it on Podnuts.
Okay.
I'm still actually, I purchased it. I'm using it every day. I'm actually using an outdated version even. I always have a pop-up saying, hey, there's a new version, but it's just still solid like as it is. I should really just go and download the newest version. I would use that to download profile information. I think it catches 90% of the files I need, and it archives them into a nice organized folder.
Yes.
Which is, it's great if you want to multitask. If I have 3-4 PCs running at once, doing backups at different stages, it's great just to not have to think about it. You have your image of the full hard drive, then you're doing your file backup for restore. If you're doing a full system restore, I just find it automates everything so well.
You know, and as far as using Fab's Auto Backup, I love that piece of software. I bought the tech version years ago, and I'm still using it today. And one of the things that it depends on the system. Sometimes I will always back up everything, and what I'll end up doing with it is sometimes if people are just interested in their pictures and, maybe things that were in your documents folder, it'll back up everything in your download folder, all the things that, you know, just in case, because actually people will keep things in their download folder. But if they don't need anything out of any of those other folders, a lot of times I'll just do a drag and drop from there. But if you want to set up a computer, basically the way it came in, even if you do a reinstall, you can basically put Fabs back on there, rerun the program, and it puts everything back, wallpaper and everything that person had set up on there. You know, the only weird thing is you might have shortcuts for programs that haven't been installed yet. And yeah, you can just get rid of those, and that's not a big deal. But everything that they need, the way that it looked is perfect, because then the customer gets it back and they're going, hey, okay, it works. And they're able to use it just the way they were using it before. So yeah, a lot of customers really like that.
Yeah, there's a few things I think that could be tweaked on it. For example, if you're backing up iTunes, I think it would be lovely if we could download the data file in the apps data, so that it could back up and restore, so that you don't have to revalidate your reauthorize your computer after the reinstall. And there's specific software that people use over here in Ireland. If you want to basically file your tax returns in Ireland, you need a security cert, and that's actually located on the C drive. And a lot of the times people don't tell you it's there, but this thing, if you delete it, they have to go back to the revenue, and it takes weeks. So if you don't back that up over here, you're in big trouble. And some accounting software actually stores all its databases actually in the program files directory. So I've really rescued myself a lot of the time by actually doing full image backups, because I can get that call like maybe 2 days afterwards. Hey, where's my database for the last 10 years of my business? And you're like, if you have that backup, it's rescued me quite a number of times, you know. So I'm very happy with that process, and definitely something for other techs to consider in the methodology of how you do backup, because I think data is the key from what we do, you know.
That is a great tip, because I always wonder sometimes, and I'll be honest, I do not always do a backup, you know, a full backup. I'll do a Fabs Auto backup with all the data and stuff like that. But as far as I have the people look through and I go, hey, do you have anything, you know, that's different in here that I might need to look for? And I kind of look around the C drive and see if I see anything that might need to be backed up. But I would have never thought of looking for anything in the program files folder. I mean, who does that anymore?
But, yeah, it's true.
Oh, so but that's a good piece of information, because it's going to make me double think now when I go to redo a machine.
Yeah. Is that lawsuit worth it, you know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So. It's worth my time. Definitely, I think.
Okay. Well, that's a good tip. So moving on to, we're talking about, what are some of your business tips that are working for you, you know, where you're at?
Oh yeah. Okay. So, I suppose from the start of my business, I running it, I suppose, part-time, semi-full-time, and I'm going into a market where I have no brick and mortar. It's just online. Probably might be very similar to what listeners are out there. So I'm totally online and through reputation. So I think the reputation is such an important thing in such a small market, only 20,000 people here in Sligo. So from the start, I looked around and seen what local businesses in the industry are offering. I decided that one of the things that I was going to exceed in is the service and the speed.
Right.
And I suppose the price. But as I'm progressing now, I think I price myself a bit more premium for the service that I'm providing. But the whole thing is I would always give 3 months support on anything I do to a customer. For example, if they come in and they get a virus, say they basically have a problem with the computer and I do a reinstall, you know, I'll charge them 65 euros, it's around 80 bucks, okay. And say, okay, if you have any problems, not even in relation to what we've done, just bring it back to me, I'll take care of it. And I would say 80% of the time, people don't come back. But the fact that I've given that reassurance, they're so happy and they refer. And even if they do come back, there's no problems. There's no ifs or buts. It's just, yeah, no problem. Just drop it in. I'll sort it out.
Right.
And I find it's a very powerful strategy to use. And it really doesn't add too much onto the time. And even when you do bring it back and they're there trying to give you money, just no, it's okay. It really just helps, you know, with reputation management.
Right. Yeah. I've had things like that happen where, you know, I've done a virus removal and cleanup. And the guy takes it home and next thing he goes to plug it in and turn it on and the power supply goes out. And it's like, you know, he brings it back in and he's already had service. So all I do is I just charge him for the power supply. You know, I'm like, yeah. hey, you know, just the part, I'll replace it real quick and you'll be on your way. And I think customer service is number one. Those who have good customer service are going to make it. Those that have poor customer service are not going to make it because I've got shops that are around here that have been around for a while and, you know, they're doing good, but I hear, you know, there's different people that will say, you know, I'm not going to go back to that shop because they, you know, they tried to upsell me too much or, you know, it's like, I just needed something simple and I just wanted to deal with the problem and they were trying to, you know, sell me all these different things. And I think when you're just dealing with people's problems and taking that for what it is and saying, hey, let's try to solve your problem. I think you have a good, you know, good work ethic there as far as doing that, because that is key nowadays, you know.
Yeah. So much competition out there, you know.
There is. And, you know, the other thing that I've said this on a couple of shows already, but I'm going to say it again. I don't care how many technicians you have in an area that actually do what we do. There, for the most part, for most places, there is plenty of work to go around. You know, as a one-person shop for myself, I can only handle so many computers a week.
Yeah,
it's true. So, you know, there's plenty to go around. And I've always told people, because I've had people that have asked me, hey, can you remote in? And that's fine for some, but I'm like, you know what? I actually like to see the equipment face-to-face. I like to clean it out, make sure that, you know, everything's running right. And I have when I'm working on a machine on a desk, I can feel how it's, if it's working properly or not. I just have that, you know, okay, this is working like it should. And, so that goes a long way too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always hear, you know, when numerous times I hear, I should have brought it to you first. It's like, right. I wish my friend told me that about you before. Like recently, a few weeks ago, this woman came in with a computer and she's like, I brought this computer to one of the local companies. I heard good things about them. I said to them, look at it, but please don't do anything till I talk to you about it. So what happened was she gets a telephone call the next day and says, your computer's ready. And she said, what about all my stuff? The guy said, oh, that partition was corrupted. There's no way the information could have been saved. And he basically reinstalled a fresh copy of Windows over it. And she was just devastated because there was like videos of her kids and everything.
Sure.
So, So I ran some data recovery. I did some research and did some data recovery on it, using some free tools. And I was able to find the files, but because there was a format over it, the files were there, but they were damaged. And there was bits of it, you know, sometimes the video would cut in and out and there'd be a bit of video, but really very damaged. So I just backed up the files for her and said, look, at the moment, the software that would take to repair this is probably extremely expensive, but I said, you know what you do, hold on to it on this external hard drive. Maybe in 5 or 10 years the software will become so commercial that you'd be able to run it through it and it could just clean them up. So I gave them back to her and I said, you know, I couldn't recover anything of you, so you know, there's no charge. And she put down like $50, said there you go, it's like it's okay. And she was really happy, you know. So
I know that's a good story, because I don't understand the shops that will just reinstall operating system. When people come into my shop, and I work out of my home, but they come in here and I say, you know, hey, if they say the machine's running slow or whatever, you know, I say, hey, look, a virus removal and cleanup is, you know, $49. If it's anything other than that, I am going to call you and let you know, and after I've checked out their hard drive and all that kind of stuff, if it's something worse, you know, I let them know, and hey, here's the cost for it. Do you want to do it or not? You know, and I kind of leave it up to them. And that's always worked well for me, because at least I let them know, hey, if I'm going to do a cleanup on it, they understand what they're paying for. But if it's more than that, they understand they're going to get a phone call to let them know what the charge is going to be, to see if they want to do it, you know, see if they want to spend the more money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I suppose the next thing is recently, but with Office 365, Office is migrating away from fixed license fees over onto a subscription based, like they've done with Adobe. And I found that you can get Windows Office 2013, but they're quite expensive and the actual programs you get are very few. So I've seen people have been coming to me saying, I need something that's up to date. So I think the best balance at the moment I find is Office 2010, because it's compatible with DOCXs and it still has support. So I've been trying to source these for customers when they've come to ask me. And the best source I'm able to find at the moment here in Ireland is off eBay, buying genuine license keys.
Okay.
But if I'm not buying directly from Microsoft, even though the company would be a registered LLC or LTD, you know, I'm still a bit suspicious of what I'm buying, because, you know, you're buying it on behalf of a customer and you don't want them to get the bad experience that one day Microsoft will say it's pirated, you know, and you're just buying this off some company on eBay. So my approach to when I buy these Office keys are, when they arrive, is to validate them using the office.com. And that process would be that you would go to office.com, and if you received the key with a CD, what you would do is you would go to office.com and then go download Office program, and then it'll ask you for your license key. So what I do is I put the license key that I got off eBay into it, and then it'll validate it. Now, two things will happen. Number one is it will say, this is not a valid key. Or the second one, it will say, this is valid key, please log into your Outlook account. When you log into your Outlook account, it actually generates an invoice from Microsoft for $0 and then emails you the license key, almost like you purchased it from Microsoft. That's basically, I find it's a good reference. So Microsoft in itself will have an association with that key, with your Outlook account. So you're even putting a presence on that key that you own it. So if someone else tries to maybe generate it, Microsoft still knows that you're the legal owner of it if something happens down the road. Now, the last time I purchased a key off a supplier in the UK, I put it into the validator and it said, this is not valid. So I rang up Microsoft and got through to India and I gave them the license key and explained I purchased it off a real company. And could they tell me what the status is of it? And the person in Microsoft told me that it was geo-blocked. And that another thing was, but the key thing, it was geo-blocked. And what geo-blocking is it's like region coding on DVDs, region 1, region 2.
Okay, you know, right.
Apparently the key should have been sold in the US market, but it was being sold. My IP address was Irish. So it wasn't, it basically seemed there was a discrepancy. So the first person was very adamant on the phone that you need to go back and get a refund on that. And then I went back to the supplier and explained this to him. And he told me that he basically sources the keys, genuine keys, from all over the world, and they come in different states. And, you know, the boxes could be destroyed, but the license keys were generally this okay. So I rang Microsoft back again, got a different person. She was very nice, and she said that geo-blocking isn't necessarily an issue with the key. And she just basically validated the key. And she said, go to the website, try it again, and it worked. And the key validated. So the key was an unused Office 2010 key. It just was basically in the wrong region. And it looks like Microsoft is flexible if you ring them up about it on the phone.
Okay. That's an awesome tip. Because that's one of those things I would have never thought of, but that's really good.
Yeah. So you always have to cover yourself in this business.
Yep. No, that's great advice.
Yeah. And I suppose the next tip would be that I always have a good quality smartphone for my computer repair. Excuse me. Probably because my other business is mobile app development, but in itself, it's great to have a smartphone because when I'm out of the office, I just forward on my landline onto my mobile, and it means I can really be anywhere. I can be out at a customer on site. I could be on break at my full-time job. You know, I'm basically always pretty much available by text or by call. And having a smartphone is so powerful that you can get your Gmail feeding into your phone. You can get your landline going in there. And it's a very, very powerful device, you know, probably more powerful than a 5-year-old PC back in the day, you know.
I love having my mobile device with me because there's a lot of things I can do. One of the things, I was at a customer's house and they had a neighbor over, and the apartments were like right next to each other, but they, you know, she was saying, if I go to my bedroom, and this wasn't a very big place, I can't get a signal to my laptop. So I'm in this other person's apartment. I pull out my phone. I pull out my Wi-Fi analyzer and pop it up. And I'm like, what's the name of your Wi-Fi? She told me, I think she named it Virus, so people wouldn't mess with it, which I had to laugh at. But, so I'm looking at it and I go, oh man, I said, I'm getting a good solid signal here. So yeah, there might be something else going on with that. And I said, if you want me to come take a look at it, I will. So it was good to have that mobile device there to be able to do, you know, simple things like that. But especially, yeah, with the phone calls and stuff like that, because I still use Google Voice for my voicemail. And so I've got two different numbers that come into my phone. So I know if a customer's calling or I know if a family member is calling.
Yeah, it's great. It's great just because I think we need to be flexible in what we do mm-hmm. in our business, you know.
Right.
I suppose the next thing is Podnuts laptop repair videos. Amazing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that really gave me an insight. It was almost like a step up that just seeing those laptops being taken apart, it kind of created some logic in my mind for the different brands of how they were actually put together. Even though I find newer laptops are pretty much the same these days, you know,
right.
The way they're put together, single screw types, excuse me. But those were very, very good buy.
Yeah, I think the Podnuts laptop repair videos were awesome. When Steve Cherubino did those back in the day, those still would work for a lot of laptops today because there is a lot of similarities between a lot of laptops. And there's basic things that come apart first, you know, before you get to the, you know, the inside of the laptop itself. And I learned a ton of information from those laptop repair videos. Those are definitely worth the buy. And they've helped me in my business. And I actually enjoy taking laptops apart now. So
Yeah. Even just the logic of it, you know, you can see how you can actually look over someone else's shoulder and see how they do it, which, you know, I don't think a lot of, you know, computer repair places that would let that happen, you know.
Right.
But it's almost like he's saying, hey, this is my computer repair biz, come in, look over my shoulder and see how I do it.
Yep.
So I think it's amazing.
Yeah. And he's, you know, there's I remember one specific tip that I still think about today, and it's something he said in one of the videos. He's like, If you're pulling on it too hard, he goes, you've missed a screw somewhere.
Yeah, I know that.
Every time he's right. I'm like, it's too much. Nope, too much. And I'll flip it over and I go, how in the world did I miss that screw? But I did. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I suppose we'll probably talk more about it in a different podcast, but I also do app development under a business, Nitrazade. And this is something I do in conjunction with Tech Guy, just a separate business. I've separated my website design and actually added app development. I've been doing that since 2012, but I'm actually releasing app service for independent computer repair techs, and it's called Tech App Creator, and it can be found at techappcreator.com. There should be a link down below. Jeff, I think we may be speaking about in a different podcast to provide a bit more information about that.
Yeah, we're going to do, we'll definitely do a Pod Nuts and where you can talk about your app and stuff like that. So you've got a lot of different things going on with regular computer repair. You've got your mobile tech apps. It sounds like you've got your hands in a lot of different places, which is awesome to have that type of knowledge and be able to do these types of things. I even see you've got, website design and stuff like that on your website. And we'll definitely come back at another time. And I'd like to hear about some of these other things in your business. And, I'm sure the listeners would love to hear about different things that you're doing in a lot of these different areas. I know we just touched on a few of them today, but we covered a lot of information. So I'm very happy.
I'd be happy to come back. Okay. Multiple streams of income is the key, I think.
There you go. That's good. Well, I appreciate, thank you, Daniel, for coming on the show. And where can people reach you at? Where's the best way that people can get in touch with you if they want to ask you a question?
You can check out my website, techguy.ie. Isn't necessarily just for computer repairs. I have an article list there. I should really be keeping it up to date, but I put up projects up there. I've neglected that probably for a year now, but there's a few interesting projects there. You can see what kind of interesting kind of wacky stuff that I'm doing with recycling tech art and stuff there or repairing stuff. But it's my website's www.techguy.ie. And if you want to shoot me an email, it's daniel@techguy.ie.
Okay, very good. Well, and you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. We'd love to hear your questions, email questions. And if you want to be if you're a technician, you want to be a guest on the show, please shoot us an email. And I want to let you guys know you can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Again, your price does not change, but a little bit of change will go to the Podnuts Network and help grow the network and keep these awesome shows coming to you. And I just want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. And we'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.